the next 4 weeks, we're going to look at a subject that I talk about an awful lot, and then every once in a while, I realize I never explain what I'm talking about. I just mention it, and then I kind of move on to something else, because it's one of the mega themes of the Bible. The Bible has all these books, all these stories, all these principles, and then there's these mega themes across it, like salvation, the sovereignty of God, which is what I talked about in our Advent season a few weeks ago. And then there's calling, the call of God. I talked about that in Genesis. These are these things that are not just in one story or in one topic or in one parable or in one proverb or in one book. They're across the whole of the Bible. And so we're going to look at a subject this month, for the next 4 weeks, that crosses over the Bible. And that is the concept of two kingdoms, that there are two kingdoms in this world. There's the kingdom of earth, and there's the kingdom of heaven. Now, the kingdom of heaven is called by many names. It's called heaven. It's called the kingdom of God. It's called the kingdom of Jesus. It doesn't matter what you call it, the spiritual kingdom, the heavenlies. You can use a lot of words, and they're used differently in the Bible. I'll just call it the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God so that we know of the other world. And then there's the kingdom of earth, which is us. This is us. We're in the kingdom of earth. I don't need to explain a lot about the kingdom of earth in this because that's what we do every week. We're going to kind of look at the connection between kingdom of God and the kingdom of earth. And I want us to turn to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. And we're going to jump into the middle of a sermon that Jesus gave. It's the first sermon that we have recorded of Jesus. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. It's Matthew 5, 6, and 7. It's his magnum opus. This is Jesus at his best. This is Jesus telling us all about what's going on. We're going to jump in the middle of it. Our team is so excited about the Sermon on the Mount that we're going to do a whole series on it after Easter. We're going to move into some other things in February and March and early April. But after Easter, we're going to come and look at this whole sermon, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. But I want to go into it in chapter 6 and jump into the middle of it because there's an important part of it. It's where Jesus taught his disciples to pray. Some of us call it the Lord's Prayer. You might call it the Our Father, whatever prayer you call. It's the prayer that Jesus taught his disciples to pray. It's in Matthew 6, starting in verse 9. And Jesus said, pray then like this. And you probably have it memorized, but I'm going to read it. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And some of your translations continue and said, for thine is the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Some don't say that, but there's a part of this that I want to talk about at the very beginning of it. It says, our Father in heaven. So Jesus immediately says and connotes and lets us know that God is our Father and he is in a different place than we are. He is in heaven. Okay, there's heaven, there's earth. We all know that, heaven and earth. But then he goes, hallowed be your name, worship. We're not going to talk about that today. We were worshiping. We'll talk about that down the road. But verse 10 gives us a glimpse of this, and he says, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. See the picture? It's very simple. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. So let me ask you this question. Is the kingdom of heaven on earth? Yes or no? Yes, it is. We are told to pray that it is. We are asked to implore God to bring it. Can I tell you, God did bring it. And it is here. The question is, what is the kingdom of heaven? How do we even know what it is? So, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, I'm going to presume you believe in heaven. Okay, many people don't believe in heaven, but if you believe in heaven, you believe there's two kingdoms. Now the question is, when does the kingdom of earth begin and end, and when does the kingdom of heaven begin and end? So many people believe this. When you're born, I'm going to start way over here because I was born a long time ago. I should probably be over here. April 6th, 1958. Yes, I'm an old man. April 6th was Easter. My mother was born on Good Friday. I was destined to be standing up here. She wasn't born 3 days before me, but she was born on a Good Friday years before. So she's Good Friday, I'm Easter. Easter 1958, I was born. Now, at some point in time, could be this afternoon, could be 30 years from now, I'm going to die. And during this time, I have been on the kingdom of earth. Hopefully, I have done great things, good things. I've done bad things. I've raised a family with Elizabeth, all these things, and it's all been done here. But something happened on October 4th, 1972, right about here. I became a member of the kingdom of heaven. How do you become a member of the kingdom of heaven? By believing in Jesus, God's son, Jesus. I'm going to talk about how to do that later, but I became a child of the Father who art in heaven, that we have been asked to bring heaven to earth. And on October 4th, 1972, I was, using a very overused term, born again. See, I wasn't born. John chapter 3, when Jesus talks about being born again, Nicodemus goes, how can I enter my mother's womb again? That's as if reincarnation. This is not about reincarnation. This is not being born again into the kingdom of earth. That's Hinduism. That's paganism. That's some new age things where people say, well, I'm going to come back again as another human, hopefully wealthier and better off the next time. This is not what we're talking about. We are not going to be born again into the kingdom of earth. We are born into the kingdom of heaven. And I was born by the Spirit in October 4th, 1972. Now, some of you may not know when you became a believer. You just know you did, and I'm okay with that. I just like to know that I was born, because I know when I was born on earth, and we celebrate it. I celebrate October 4, 1972 as well. October 4th is an important date for me because I became a member of the second kingdom. Now, over here, at some point, I'm going to die. Now, the question is, what is between here and here? And between here and here, I live in two kingdoms. And when I die, I'm going to leave the kingdom of earth and continue in the kingdom of heaven. Some people believe you die and you enter into the kingdom of heaven. I don't believe you die and enter into the kingdom of heaven. I believe you enter the kingdom of heaven when you were born into the kingdom of heaven, not when you die from earth. See the difference? When you die from earth, that gets you into the afterlife, absolutely. You're gone from earth. But you want to be born into a kingdom, you got to be born while you're living here. Now the question becomes, how do you live from here to here? Because you're living in two kingdoms. Not one kingdom, two kingdoms. And Jesus shares that with us. And for the next 4 weeks, we're going to look at that. What does it mean to live between, for me, October 4, 1972, and the day I physically die? For you, and see, here's the thing, it doesn't matter when you were born again. The thief on the cross only had about an hour between that he lived in the two kingdoms. But I tell you what, you got to be born into the new kingdom before you die from the old kingdom. That's the important thing. People think, oh, I'm just going to deal with it afterwards. There is no dealing with it afterwards. You got to deal with it now. And the entire New Testament and Jesus' teaching is about living in the two kingdoms, either how you enter into the second kingdom or how you live into the kingdom. All these great verses, it's that, you know, turn the other cheek, and it's better to give than to receive, and all those great things. Those are all two kingdom concepts. Blessed are the poor in spirit, that's a two kingdom concept. Blessed are the merciful, that's a two kingdom concept. So we're going to look at it, and I'm going to start today Just turn the page over one page, depending on your Bible, to verse 19. And I'm going to give you, or Jesus gives us, and I'm going to talk about three examples of the two kingdoms. Can we just give three examples of it? First of all, he talks about treasures, which are investments, your assets, who you are. Second of all, he talks about your focus. Third of all, he talks about who is your master. Can we read it? Verse 19 of Matthew chapter 6. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. See the two kingdoms? Where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. We need to understand he's talking while you're alive. He's not saying, don't do it now, but do it when you die. He's talking about people who are living. These people are living. He's saying, don't store up your treasures on earth, but store them up in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. Verse 21, one of the key verses in all the Bible and certainly in this theme of the two kingdoms, for where your treasure is, there your heart is also. We'll come back to that. The second one is the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? And then he says the third one, no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Some of your translations say mammon. Well, let's look at these. Let's go back to the first one. Treasures. You cannot, he talks about treasures. And he says these words, there's three things you shouldn't do. He says, do not lay up your treasures on earth because three things. Number one, your treasures will be devoured by moths. Moths. Now, that seems a little ridiculous, doesn't it, that an insect can take your treasures? Well, they lived back then when one of the most important assets they had, one of the most important investments they had was their clothes. In the 21st century, clothes are dispensable. This shirt's going to rip. It's made to break down. It's going to last a few months, a few years, and off it goes. When people die, what do they do with their clothes? They bring them to church, and we give them to the homeless, right? People don't inherit clothes. Well, back then, people inherited clothes because they would weave gold thread through them, gorgeous. There would even be some pearls sometimes woven in and other precious and semi-precious metals, or gems, rather, and incredible things because coats, cloaks, robes, all these things were important, but moths would come in and destroy them. What does that mean nowadays? Well, let me just bring it to Florida. Can we bring it to Florida? All of you, except a few of us, are transplanted here. Nothing wrong with that, but you are here for one reason only. Everyone here, oh, but I came to get married. I came to go to school and stayed. I came to retire. That's all nonsense. You are here because of one thing. Do you know what that is? Central air conditioning. Oh, you laugh. Where were you in 1962, those of you who are living? You weren't in Florida, except a few of us who were here. I can look at 5 or 10 of us who were here. Somewhere in the early 1960s, there was central air. But before central air, I'd go to my grandmother's house, a little kid. She never had central air, and she died in 1990. She never had central air. So I'd go to her house, and she had these little balls. You remember those? See, you younger ones don't. You lived in this central air life. Balls. They're called mothballs. And the entire house had mothballs. I go, why do we have, what is this? Smell. And it wasn't just in her closet. It was on every rack. And she was a collector, so it was on every collection of everything. It was everywhere. She goes, I don't want the insects. I go, moths? We barely even have moths. No, it's not about the moths. It's about the ants, and it's about the this, and it's about the that. It's about the termites. It's about all these things. And her whole house was nothing but mothballs. Why? Because things do get destroyed. What are the things? It's a metaphor for pictures. A picture, a metaphor. What gets destroyed? Can I tell you, the economy can destroy your investments. Your partner can destroy your investment. Your children can destroy your investments. Your illness late in life where you have to pay for health care can destroy your investments. Your investments can be eaten alive that fast. I was talking with a friend, and this morning we were praying, and, you know, a lifetime of assets built up, hoping the parents, who will live maybe 3 more years, will have enough money and it will just zero out at the end. 80 years to build up assets, and it's all going to be spent in the last 3 years for their health care. You go, this is being eaten up, isn't it? I mean, things just eat it up. So if it's going to be eaten up, he says, send it into the kingdom of heaven where it won't be eaten up. And then he says, it's going to rust. It's going to be destroyed by rust. Again, in Florida, we get rust, don't we? Everything rusts. Do you know, I'm not an engineer, but that the caving down, the very sad thing that happened in the condominium in Surfside, I was reading all the engineering reports. I love it because I'm a commercial realtor at heart. It's kind of my first language. I love it. But it was so detailed. But inside of those issues was rust. There were some miscalculations on the engineering. There was some water problems. There's other kind of problems. And then we have authorities here in this room who are engineers and retired engineers that know rust and know engineering buildings and can give you the chapter and verse on all of it. But can I tell you, it went down? It's a tragedy. It went down. We have friends staying with us, and during the holidays, we go and look at all the lights. So one of the nights, we went into our old neighborhood where Elizabeth and I met. As you know, we were 2 blocks apart. Went to my street number in my house. My house doesn't exist anymore. It was torn down, and it's been rebuilt a second time. That's 3 houses on that property. I tell you what, it just goes away. We went to her property, and we knew this, but the guy didn't know, our friend, and there's her house, but it's not her house. Her house got torn down as well. The other house I grew up in 2 houses in Boca, it's about to get torn down. I'm going, I can't even show my grandkids where I grew up. I grew up over there. You know, it's sad because why? Because things deteriorate in this state because of rust. And investments deteriorate because of rust. For those of you who know I love history, there was a war that occurred in the 1850s and 60s called the Crimean War over in Crimea in the Ukraine between the Russians, the British, and the Ottomans. Not important, but this is what's important. Have you ever watched swashbuckling? Have you ever watched a sword fight on TV or in the movies? It always shows a very stainless steel piece of metal, clean. Well, the reality was they didn't have stainless steel back then. They didn't have clean. It was all rust. If the sword was around a while, it would get rusty. And it was a time that it was so brutal. This is when Florence Nightingale, the whole modern nursing movement, came about, because what they discovered is even with a flesh wound, with a rusty sword, people were dying. Why? Because rust brings in death. It's gangrene, tetanus, and all these other things I can't even pronounce. So what they were discovering, this is interesting, and this is how they discovered it, those warriors, army people who had cotton and wool as their undergarments, when a sword was thrust in, assuming it didn't hit an organ and kill them, if it thrust in, it would break through the material and the rust would stay in the body. So even if it was in the arm or the leg where they weren't going to die, the rust got in the body and they died. But if they had silk undergarments, the silk didn't puncture. The silk moved like a sheath. And it moved in, and so the sword did its damage, but it never touched the inside of the body. And those people would heal. That's how they understood the whole issue of gangrene and tetanus. Out of that war, they realized that if the rust never touched, it wouldn't decay. Rust decays, and we have rust in our investments. Let me tell you, the economy, we've got inflation. Who knows what's going to happen with all this debt? Who knows where we're going to go with all? Is the dollar still going to be the primary monetary, or is it going to become something else? We don't know. Our economy is rusting, and your assets are a part of that economy. It's rusting. So it's going to be destroyed in some way or another. And then the third one is stolen. It says it's just going to be outright stolen. Have you ever had anything stolen from you? Now, there's kind of the stealing like in homes, and then there's the stealing of, you know, let's call it white-collar crimes that happen all the time, and you have been stolen from. Your name has been stolen from. Your email address has been stolen from. Your credit card numbers have been stolen, haven't they? Oh, my goodness, when that happens, it's like, how do you get out of this? I mean, it's like, it's not me, and, you know, it's an amazing thing. I remember Elizabeth and I we had small kids, and we went down, it was Halloween. We're not big into Halloween, but we're not goofy about it. So we were trick-or-treating, and we're down, and our house gets robbed. The only time, my father-in-law had just given me the inherited watch. Okay, the gold watch, the actual gold watch that I was going to put into the safe and never wear. It was sitting on the counter because I got it the day before. Gone. Never to be replaced. It's gone. It's like one day later, I would have gotten it into the safe deposit box and it would have been fine, but it's gone. It is what it is. It's getting stolen. But what does he say here? He says, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. What he is saying is that you can lay up treasures in heaven now. Now, what does the word lay up mean? Lay up's a tough word because lay up normally means lay, usually means rest, right? I now lay me down to sleep. I lay down. But lay up is an active word, isn't it? How many of you ever played basketball or watched basketball? What is the easiest way to score in a basketball game? A layup. A layup. Now, for those of you who don't know basketball, if there's any in here, there's a basket, it's 10 foot high. This is why you need tall people to play basketball usually. It's 10 foot high. People like me, when I was playing basketball, I could just put my hand up at the basket and lay it in. You don't miss. You just lay it in. Shorter people would actually shoot it, but it would be so close, you'd only be 3 feet away, and you'd lay it in as opposed to those long shots. It was easy. You call it a layup. Even in business, you go, boy, that was a layup. It was just easy to do. It's a layup. And he's saying, lay up treasures, not on earth where it's all going to corrode and rust and be stolen, but lay it up over here. You can do things now that will help you then. I think the fact that our church is supporting this couple is laying up treasures in heaven for those of you who support this. And you go, well, I'm only giving a little. Well, you know what? A little goes a long way with God, doesn't it? Because his economy is not our economy. My economy is I give a dollar, I might make 5%, 10% on a great year, 20%. You give to God, and God does immeasurably more than we could even think or ask. It's an amazing thing. Now, the second one is your focus. Look at that next verse. The eye is the lamp of the body. It's your focus. What are we focusing on? What are you focusing on? If you're only focusing on yourself, on the earth, on your kids, on your grandkids, on your assets, it's all going to go away. But are you focusing this way? One of our other partners is a group called Food for the Poor. Excuse me. They provide in about 18 countries around the Caribbean and parts of the South American and Central American countries that are on the Caribbean, and they support them, build houses, food, medical, all these incredible things. And what their motto is, or their mission is, it says it right on the wall, Ed Rain, the head of it, all these guys do it. It says, to turn the face of the American church to the third world church. Now, third world's not used, but to the majority world people. In other words, they're asking us, the American church, who is so focused on ourselves, to move our focus onto other people. See, and that's what God is saying, and that's what Jesus is saying. Where is your focus? Is your focus here, or is your focus here? Now, it's not that you live in heaven. You live in the kingdom of heaven. What are you doing here that makes sense here? Another quick history thing. In World War II, the Japanese were taking over Papua New Guinea and other places, and they wanted to take over Singapore, which was controlled by the British. So Singapore is an island below Malaysia. It's not important, but it's an island. Very important city now. It was a smaller city back then, but the reason it was important because the trading lanes or the shipping lanes, the Straits of Malacca were there. So what the British did, they said the Japanese are going to come by ship. So they fixed all their guns, and they were so big and powerful, they had to cement them into the ground and bolt them into the cement and all this, and they put them all along the Straits of Malacca. Well, the Japanese were a little smarter than the British at that point in time, and they came down through Thailand, down through Malaysia, through the jungles. They couldn't get their jeeps and things. They rode bicycles into Singapore and took it over. They took over Singapore with bicycles. Why? Because the focus of the guns was that way, and they were coming in from this way. And they couldn't turn the guns around. And in a day and a half or 2 days, the whole island fell to the Japanese. And then those who could escape, they escaped on the few boats that were there. They got out, and then the Japanese sunk the boats with their own guns. Do you see that? You got to have the right focus. When you have the wrong focus, wrong things happen. Now, the third is this. Let's go to it, because this is very important. No one, verse 24, can serve two masters. Now, here's the presupposition of this. All of us serve a master. Everyone serves a master. You need to realize that. If your assets and investments, they may be your master. Either you're serving them or they're serving you. Your job could be the master. Either it's serving you or you're serving it. Your family could be your master. All these things. We have a lot of opportunities as masters, but there's two general categories of it. And he says here, you're either going to hate the one and love the other. And everybody gets onto this hate word. You need to understand, this is not the hate word like I'm angry at you and I hate you. This is the hate word is I choose not to go that way. I hate to go that way. It's not that I hate it that I'm angry about it. It's just I don't go that way. I go this way. And he's saying, hate the one and choose the other. Be devoted to one and not the other. Do you see that? We get caught on this word hate, and that's not the purpose of it. The purpose is, are you serving God? And then some of your translations say mammon. That is a terrible word. You know why? Because none of us know what it means. So we can kind of go, yeah, I serve God. I don't serve this mammon stuff. I don't even know what mammon is. Well, mammon is just a big old-fashioned word from the 1600s that means everything you own. That's all that means. It's everything you have. The word that my translation uses and I prefer is money. Now, I know that's an American word, and this is the English Standard Version, so it's an American version, money. Why is that? Because when I was in real estate and you would come to me to buy a property, I'd go, what are you worth? Can you afford this? And what would you say? Oh, I own this, this, and this. And I would say, how much is it worth? And we would put a dollar amount by that, right? Oh, I own this house, or I own this car, and I own this building. And we go, okay, what's it worth? And we put, and sometimes we'd appraise it, and there it is. How much are your debts? Oh, I owe this on my car, I owe this on my property, I owe this on my college loans. And we put it there. We just take the positive, take the negative, and hope there was positive at the bottom. And with that, you could buy the property. It was all money. Everything can be converted down to money. It's kind of sad that it can be, but it's converted down to money. And which are you going to serve? Are you going to serve God? Are you going to serve money? And you go, I don't serve money. I don't serve God. Well, you're going to serve one or the other. Let me give you a couple of examples on that. I'll just give you one. Years ago, when we started World Lead, one of the first countries we went to was a country of Nepal. Nepal is where the Himalayas are, Mount Everest, 6 of the top 10 tallest. They're right there. It's an unbelievable, beautiful country, abject poverty. It's between India, the buffer between India and China. And so it has some Indian influence and some Chinese influence, and then its own influence. The food is magnificent, but they're very poor there. They have their own currency. It's called the Nepalese rupee, like Indian rupees, the Nepalese rupee. And so when you go there, it's not worth a lot, so you got to get a lot of it, and you got to pay cash for everything. And so I went over there, and I had this much money in rupees. You know, it was $1,000, maybe, whatever it was. It was like this much money. And we're paying for the lunches and the dinners and the hotel, and I'm getting more rupees, and then we leave. And I've got all these rupees in my bag, and I get back to India, because you got to fly 1 hour to get to Delhi, and then you can fly to America. So we're in Delhi, this big airport, huge, one of the biggest in the world, and you're there. And I go to the currency exchange, and I go, I want to exchange my Nepalese rupees to U.S. dollars. And I kind of open the satchel and throw them all out. It was just this pile of money. And the lady begins to laugh. She laughs at me. Now, I've never had somebody laugh at me at a currency exchange. She's laughing. She goes, "They're worthless." I go, "What do you mean they're worthless?" She goes, "They're only worth money in Nepal. It's a soft currency." I said, "Well, give me Indian rupees. Give me euros. I'll take the yen. I'll take anything." She goes, "They're worthless. Do you understand what that means? They're worthless. Go back to Nepal and exchange it into Indian rupees or U.S. dollars or euros in Nepal. You can do it where it's worth something. But the minute you leave..." So 2 hours before, I had thousands of dollars in my satchel. 2 hours later, I had zero in my satchel. Paper. Do you see that? Now, I could go back to Nepal, which we did the next year and used it, but when you die, you're not coming back. You are not coming back. And can I tell you, everything you have is like the Nepalese rupee. It is worth something here, and it is worthless here. I'm just telling you that. If you don't think it's true, it is true. So you got to convert the rupees now into something that's worth something later on. And you got to figure out, that's why we have church, and that's why we come together, because that's what it's all about, is making sure what we do here converts to what happens here. Because if you're only going to spend it here, you're going to walk away with leftovers. We're all going to have leftovers. We're going to go, and they're going to go, "It's back there." You know, we talk about there are no bankers in heaven, and the hearse has no money in it. That's all fun to say, but the reality is, it's all Nepalese rupees. Now, let's go back to the key verse. Verse 21. "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Where your treasure is, your heart is. So what does this mean? Here's my heart. Here's my treasure. Where my heart is, my treasure is. Where my treasure is, my heart is. It's a simple math statement. I'm not a mathematician, but A equals B means B equals A. Where my heart is where my treasure is. Where my treasure is where my heart is. So people come to me and go, "Oh, I love God, I love this, I love that." I said, "What are you doing with your life?" You know, "I'm just into myself, into my family, into my thing." I go, "Okay, that's where your heart is. You're not into God. You can say you're into God, but you're not into God. If you're into God, that's where your heart's going to be, because that's where your treasure is." Do you see it? I'm not trying to call out hypocrites, because we're all hypocrites to some extent, but please understand that your heart and your treasure are going to be together whether you like it or not. So you cannot hide it. So now let me ask you the question, where is God's treasure? Where is God's treasure? Well, I gave you the answer. It's where his heart is, right? Where's God's heart? It's where his treasure is. So let's figure out where God's heart is, and we'll figure out where his treasure is. Can we do that? You don't need to turn there. You know this verse, John 3:16 and 17. "For God," okay, so we're talking about God, "so loved..." That's a heart issue. "The world," his treasure, "that he gave," that's a heart issue, loving, giving, generosity, those are heart issues, "that he gave his son, that whosoever," or whoever, that's the treasure, "believes in the son will have everlasting life, will enter into the kingdom of heaven." The problem is, we think God is this vindictive, judging, hating, I'm gonna get you, God. And Jesus came down to show he's perfect and you're not, which he did. But what does the next verse say? Verse 17, we never read that one. But God sent not his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. So God's heart is where his treasure is. God's heart is love, generosity, the giving of his son. To whom? To those in the world. And our job is to receive it and to believe in it. And what is it? To believe on the Son. Because if you believe in the Son, you shall have the kingdom of heaven. And then you can send your assets ahead. And that's what the two kingdoms is about. And we're going to talk about how to practically understand this over the next couple of weeks. Now, let me close. Five kids, Elizabeth and I have five kids. The first four love sports. The last one loved the arts. So I'm going to talk about the first four. And they all love basketball. I wonder why. All love basketball. So the community basketball leagues, I would coach them. It's called Boca Hoops. A great, and they had Sabre soccer, all these things. But I did the coaching of basketball in our family. So one year, I was tired out coaching all these kids, and you just get tired out sometimes. So I asked my kids, would it be okay if I didn't coach this year? And they were, a couple of them were middle school. They said, no problem, Dad. Okay. So we get on a team. I'm still the rooting dad, and not the helicopter dad, but a rooting dad. And so the coach was a soccer coach whose son said, Dad, would you coach me in basketball? So he was short and fast, good with the feet. Well, you need to be tall and good with the hands for basketball. So he wasn't the best coach, but a nice guy. And anyway, it's just basketball, community league anyway. So we're doing this. Well, one of our kids who was taller, not my kids, but one of the kids on the team, had this very obnoxious mother and father. Like, have you ever seen them at a ball game? They think their kid's going to be the next LeBron James. And, you know, it's like, I tell you what, if you're not LeBron James, your kid's not going to be LeBron James. Just, I tell these people, you know, if you're not Michael Jordan, your kid's not going to be Michael Jordan. You know, so anyway, at the end of a game, they're screaming, put my son in, put our son in, he's the best. And, you know, and some other invectives were going on. At the end of the game, we lost, of course, no big deal. And at the end, at Boca Hoops, you go outside, one of the parents brings a cooler, they open it up, everybody gets Gatorades and a power bar. The other kids are there, the younger kids are trying to see if there's any extra Gatorade. It's a great thing. There's usually six teams assembled all over doing this. So it's 30 there, 30 there, 30 there, moms and dads. So we're having our little team meeting, and what does the coach say? We lost, but he's trying to do a stiff upper lip thing. And then the mom goes after him, this mom. So here, excuse my back. Here's the coach. Here's the mom. Now, the mom was tall. She was tall. Coach was short. She is screaming at him every word. I have not even heard some of these words. And I grew up in a locker room. I have not heard some of these words. And now you have these kids everywhere. Now you have these five other teams listening. It was the most obnoxious thing, screaming at the top of her lungs at this poor guy. What do you do? She wasn't going to stop. So I tell you what I did. I walked between them. And excuse my back. I stood right here, and here's this lady, she's shorter than me, screaming at him that she can no longer see. Screaming. I'm talking about every four-letter and five-letter word you've ever heard. Screaming, screaming, screaming. And then all of a sudden, she got quieter, but still yelling those same words. And by the end, she started mumbling the words. And then finally, she walked away. And we never saw that guy and that family again. You see, Jesus Christ blocks for you. If I can use it and mix my metaphor, he has your back. Jesus Christ has your back. I'm telling you, we live in two kingdoms, not so that we can get to the heaven with the angels, but heaven came down to us. And we celebrated it a week and a half ago with Christmas. Jesus Christ is here. He's alive through his Spirit, and his Spirit is there to protect us. Now, it is not easy. Life is not easy. Elizabeth and I can tell you, it is not easy. Death, separation, spoiled relationships, businesses go bad, economies go bad, investments go bad, but Jesus Christ is there. And when he is there, he is blocking for you, and he is blocking the enemy from you, because greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. And that's what it means to have two kingdoms. It means that you, as a believer, have the kingdom of heaven, because didn't we talk about this before? We are the temple of God now. We have the kingdom of heaven. It's not that we're heaven. It's not that we're God. But God is with us and among us and will help us. And as we enter 2022, do not enter it alone. Do not enter it with a fat checkbook or cryptocurrency or whatever you may have these days. That's all good. But realize it's Jesus Christ, because he is the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through him. Let's pray together.